Thank you so much for downloading our podcast. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. We teach what the Bible tells us are the best ways to handle money. In the Bible, you'll find 2,500 verses that talk specifically how God wants us handling money. And we use these biblical principles as part of our small group Bible study called Faith and Money Matters. Check us out at CompassCatholic.org. My name is Steve Holbrook, and joining me are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. Well, today our discussion is all about money decisions and the importance of those money decisions as part of your marriage.
You know, money can be one of those hot button areas of a marriage because people bring into their marriage all the assumptions and experiences of their families and the way they manage and think about money.
Each spouse has been raised in a different environment. So there's no two people coming into a marriage that are going to think exactly the same way as their spouse on any issue.
So maybe you were raised in a family where debt was the norm, or maybe you were raised in a family that always paid cash for everything.
Or maybe your parents gave you a generous spending allowance, or maybe you had to earn every penny that you spent starting at an early age.
Maybe your parents gave you a credit card, or maybe they helped you develop a budget.
And maybe you are very detail-oriented and balance your checkbook to the penny every month. Kudos to you. Or maybe you don't bother balancing your checkbook at all.
So you can see that all of these differences can drive a wedge between you and your spouse. So the way you handle money needs to be understood by both of you, or it's going to become an issue in your marriage.
Misunderstandings about finances can often be the trigger for arguments, tension, anger, stress, worry. It's important for you to work together and develop a way to make decisions about managing your money in your marriage, not just when bills are due or when the debt is overwhelming or when a large purchase needs to be made.
But every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Yes.
And it's equally important that both the husband and the wife share responsibility for the family finances. And that's true whether one or both of you works, no matter which one of you has the larger income, or who actually functions as the family accountant.
The key point here is that finances are a joint responsibility in marriage. I think that needs to be repeated. Finances are a joint responsibility in marriage. You both have to be involved. And the more that you keep your finances separate, the more you're going to build up walls within other areas of your marriage.
When you're coaching couples, do you find it difficult? Because you're right, the husband or the wife normally handles the finances in the family.
But that's okay.
Right, I know, I understand that. But the individual who doesn't, is it tough for them to get involved because they either have no interest in doing the finances?
It varies all over the place. Sometimes they have no interest. Sometimes they've just given up on it because the family finances are in such a mess that they've just thrown up their hands and, you know, abdicated to the spouse that's causing all the problems.
So how hard is it to get them to sit down together and talk about the financial situation in the family?
I think it depends on them coming to a turning point. They got to reach a point where they're ready to make a change.
They have to have hit bottom. You know, and if that's the case, then it's pretty easy to get them to talk because they're looking for solutions. They're not looking to place blame.
And you're right. Once you hit bottom, it's better to have two heads working on a solution than somebody out there floating around by themselves.
Well, I don't think I've ever seen a marriage where only one person spent money. And if they're both spending money, then they are both part of the problem and they're both part of the solution. And so you got to have them working together.
But what we've seen is a lot of times couples just evolve into a certain way of handling money. So maybe it's time to visit those assumptions and see if there is any adjustments that you want to make. Or maybe you're a newlywed and you need to figure out how to manage money as a couple. So either way, here are some important financial decisions that you need to discuss and make as a couple.
And I think one of the first things you have to talk about is yours, mine, or ours. You know, we've seen a lot of couples who keep separate accounts and they divide the financial responsibilities so they each have separate bills to pay. That's okay as long as everything's going along the way you envisioned it. You know, you're both working, you're both earning money, and you're earning enough to pay those bills, and nothing bad happens. You know, there's no emergencies, there's no crises. But what happens the first time somebody gets laid off, they lose their job, they get sick and injured and can't go to work? Then how are you going to handle it?
Well, the one that always pops into my mind on that situation where it's split finances is, whose responsibility are the children?
The thing is that when you're doing that and you've got specific responsibilities, then it's just kind of creating walls that don't need to be there. It's not necessarily a good thing. Now, I say that because it's not my paradigm, to be perfectly honest. When we got married, we just automatically merged our money together. There was no question about it. We didn't even think about yours and mine. It was just ours from the get-go. At the same time, I've known couples who have been doing yours and mine and ours for 20 years, 30 years, and they've made it work exceptionally well. It still boils down to what's best for you as far as the way you handle it. But as soon as there's an issue that raises up based on doing something like that, then it's time to take a really hard look at what you're doing and make sure you're not creating problems that are going to cause even bigger problems down the road.
So the second decision, which kind of leads into what you were just saying, is how are we going to manage money in our marriage? Because unless you're as rich as Bill Gates, there's only a certain amount of money coming in every month. And it's important to have a plan for managing that money.
You know, if you don't have a plan, it's going to slip through your fingers. And you're going to find out that you probably don't have enough money for necessities. So you've got to discuss a plan for budgeting and knowing how much is coming in, from where, and then where is it going to? And you should both be involved in that. One of you should be the family accountant who's responsible to pay the bills and keep track of the budget. And this kind of goes to what you were talking about, Steve. The other one should know everything there is and how to pay the bills too. And you know how you do that is you have weekly or biweekly or at the very longest monthly money dates, you know, whatever you want to call them, where you talk about, this is what happened last month. This is how we spent money in these categories. This is where we went over. This is where we didn't go over. These are the bills that are coming up in next month. So you're both right there on the same page.
You know, it's also important too that for those that do not pay the bill, that they understand how the bills are paid, especially online. Because
yes.
If something should happen, let's say to your wife and she's off visiting her mother for 2 weeks and the bills need paid, do you know the password? Do you know what website she goes to pay the bill?
Yes, that's very important. Very important. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to manage the money. There's apps, there's spreadsheets, there's softwares. The important thing is to find something that works for you and your family and then stick to it.
You know, one of the things we did, Steve, guess what? We created a
spreadsheet.
And we listed all of those things that get paid online, when they're due, what the account is, and how to get into it. You know, all that stuff is just laid out. So you could take a look at that spreadsheet, figure out which day of the month it is, and go right down and pay the bill.
No, that's an excellent best practice for paying bills. It works for you guys, and hopefully somebody else will take advantage of that system as well.
Well, it's a system. And, you know, everybody needs a system. Mm-hmm. They might not be spreadsheet junkies, so they do it some other way. But, you know, it's you got to have a system, I think, to make that work.
Otherwise, there's chaos. Financial chaos is never
Absolutely.
Good. So the third decision that you need to make as a couple is your decision process related to money. So if you have a predefined decision-making process, it makes things a lot easier when you come to a time when you're both not on the same page.
Yeah, the husband and wife have got to have a proper balance to be able to make good decisions. And it doesn't matter, you know, if your spouse, and I'm not picking on any gender here, but if your spouse doesn't have a financial background, they don't have a business background, it doesn't make any difference because the both of you are in this marriage together 50-50, and you're both going to be affected in some way based on all the financial decisions that you're making. So you have to get your spouse's input on any financial decisions probably, you know, we made it a decision a long time ago that we wouldn't spend more than, I don't know, it was $100 or $200.
No, I think it was more like 50.
Oh, well, it's grown. It's inflation.
Well, I didn't realize it was 200 now.
I think there's some inflation that creeped into that. But
maybe the official number is 200, but we never spend more than 50 without really talking about it or mentioning
not.
It at
yeah.
least.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, if you don't have that decision-making process and one of you makes a decision the other doesn't agree with, and it turns out to be a disaster, then you get into this, I told you so, I told you so, and that's never a good thing in marriage. So why don't you describe our decision-making progress, John, process?
Well, if I feel really strongly about making a decision and Evelyn really doesn't care one way or another, then we'll go with my instinct. And if she feels really strongly about something and I don't really care, then we'll go with her sense of direction on it. And if neither one of us feels very strong about the decision, or each of us feels really strongly but in opposite directions, then we don't do anything except pray and wait. And in addition to the prayer, many times we'll create a list or a spreadsheet that allows us to document the thoughts and feelings and, you know, what happens if we do this that's good, what happens if we do this that's bad. And it makes it easier, I think, if you can see all that kind of stuff on paper and then think about it, analyze it, and then you just have to be patient for the Lord to show you the direction. And if it's a big issue, it can be months. I know we've taken as many as 6 months to buy a car after we thought we were ready to make a decision.
So many great points made so far. My favorite's communication. Communicating as a couple in regards to your finances. Also crucial that you have a budget or spending plan. Both excellent in helping you manage the family finances. If you missed any of today's recommendations, we have them posted on our website, compasscatholic.org. Scroll down, click on podcast summary. Now, Evelyn, let's continue with a few other recommendations that you and John have.
The fourth important money decision for every couple is how much do we plan to save in an emergency fund? You know, there's always something that pops up and ruins our best laid plans, so it's important to have an emergency fund. And starting that emergency fund means deciding how much you feel comfortable having on hand in case you need it for an emergency.
And obviously, more is better than less. But you got to plan for it. And if you don't talk about it and plan for it, it's never going to become a reality. So what happens if there's no emergency fund? You can be guaranteed you're going to get some kind of a budget buster. The only way that you're going to be able to handle that situation, that crisis, is to use your credit card. Accumulate more debt. Our recommendation is you should start immediately with a $1,000 emergency fund, and you get that built up just as quickly as possible. And as soon as you get to $1,000, you don't stop. You carry forward and build up to 3 months. But after you get to the $1,000, then you can start doing a debt repayment program, snowballing your credit cards and stuff like that to begin to pay those off. Ultimately, you're going to take 3 months and go to 6 months and 6 months to go to 12 months. That's down the road. It's not going to happen in the next 3 weeks. I know that.
Well, and the other thing is you may want to change the amount you have for emergencies as your life changes. You know, as you get older, you may want to have more in an emergency fund because you may need it for medical purposes, for example. So it's important for you, too, to decide how much you want to have in that emergency fund and what you feel comfortable with.
You know, another thing is how much should we be saving? You know, having a savings plan is really important part of planning for your financial future, for your financial security. And so we've already talked about the emergency fund, but there are other types of savings that you should have towards your long-term goals, sending the kids to college for retirement. Maybe you've got some midterm goals of buying a new car or a new one to you. Maybe it's still used, hopefully. Okay, buying a house or doing renovations to the house. And then you've probably got some short-term goals like spending money for Christmas and vacation and things like that.
So each of these savings goals are important, and with different time frames, there's just different vehicles to use for savings. So short term should be in something that's readily available, a cash product. Midterm is something that will earn a higher interest rate, such as a money market or mutual fund. And longer term needs can be in a more risky investment, such as stocks. The important thing is to be on the same page about your goals and how much you're saving for which goal and what savings vehicle suits your purpose best.
So how do you deal with a couple or an individual that have multiple needs for saving? Emergency fund, retirement, kids' education, you got Christmas coming up. How do you coach them into prioritizing?
Well, a lot of people think it's all or nothing. You know, I either have to save for retirement or I have to save for an emergency fund. But we recommend building the emergency fund first and having that as your highest priority. If you're talking about something like Christmas, maybe it's a year where you have a lean Christmas. Maybe you don't need to spend as much as you normally spend.
In order to prepare for the following Christmases.
In order to prepare and save for the following Christmases.
Well, I also think that you can be saving for more than one thing at a time. You know, when you create a budget, one of the categories is savings, and one of the subcategories could be saving for a new car, saving for college education, saving for retirement. It just doesn't have to be, oh, I can only save for one thing at a time until I reach that, and then I'll start saving for the other. You gotta spread that out a little bit.
Maybe it's getting into the mindset where you're not just saving, it's $100 at a clip. Maybe it's $15, $20 in each of those compartments.
It depends on your budget and you know how much money you have to spend in that savings category. One thing that I really strongly recommend, and I know it's hard for some people to really to think through it and get involved with it, but if your employer gives you a matching amount of money on your 401k, that's free money. And sometimes they'll match 50% of what you give up to a total of 6%. I just read recently about a company that would match 100% up to 6%. But that's free money. So, you know, if you're putting away $100 a month and your employer is going to match up, you know, up to six, you might get the whole, depending on what that is compared to your salary, you might get that whole $100 match. That's free money. And you got to take advantage of that. So you got to have, you know, the 401k, that's kind of retirement, long-term savings kind of a product. But don't lose sight of that free money.
That's a place where I think a lot of people fall into a black hole because they don't think about the long term. It's the spending is all about today.
True.
You know, it's what I want, what I need, what I see. And that long term focus is extremely important when you're talking about finances.
So the next topic is how much do we give? And this is one of my favorite topics, you know, because people... They work from a scarcity mentality. I don't have enough to give. And what they should be thinking about is an abundance mentality. I have so much that I need to give some of it. Even if you don't have so much, okay, you still have that abundance mentality, or you can have that abundance mentality. And it makes it so much easier to give, especially when you understand that God's going to continue to bless you.
Now, you're not...
Not necessarily money, okay? I'm not saying God's going to give you more money.
Right.
Okay? But you're going to receive blessings. How or what the format is of those blessings, you know, nobody really knows.
God knows.
God knows. You're right.
You know, Steve, one of the questions we got from a listener was the person that wrote in said that their spouse, they were not on the same page as their spouse as far as their spirituality, and they wanted to give money to the church, but the spouse was adamantly opposed to it, and they asked us what to do. And we suggested they start by talking to their spouse about an amount they were comfortable giving on a regular basis, and the amount didn't matter so much as honoring their spouse's input. You know, God doesn't care if you give $100 or $10, if you give $100 and it causes problems in your marriage, that's not a good thing. If you give $10 and it calms things down in your marriage, that's much better than making a marriage fall apart because of giving.
And you do it with a joyful heart.
Yes.
You know, that attitude in giving is really important. So let me ask you this question. We've been talking about having a budget. So that's a plan on how you're spending your money. Have you ever thought about having a plan for your giving, for your generosity? I'm going to give this much money to the church. I'm going to give this much money to the bishop. I'm going to give this much money to Catholic Charities or some other Catholic charity. Remember, most non-Catholics are not going to give to Catholic Charities, so we have to support Catholic Charities, all of them, in different ways. Where you've got a passion, that's where you need to be involved. But create a plan. Don't just let it be haphazard.
Or when somebody asks.
Right, exactly.
All right, the seventh important decision for couples to make is how much debt is too much debt. You know, the average household credit card debt is $16,000. There's student loans that may average between $40,000 and $200,000. There's car loans. Some families have as much as $70,000 in car loans for two cars. And then there's mortgages added on top of all that, which add up to probably $150,000 to $200,000 or more. So when all that's added together, it's easy to see how a couple could have $300,000 or more in debt.
And nobody planned to get into this much debt. I mean, you didn't set out, we're going to get married and we're going to rack up $300,000 worth of debt. I don't think you had that thought in mind. It happens, and it happens gradually over time. So what we're suggesting is that you have a discussion about limiting the amount of debt that you have. You know, maybe it means that you stop using the credit cards as soon as you get your unpaid balance to X point, okay? Maybe you decide you're never going to have two car payments at the same time. That's a good thought. Take it to zero car payments. Maybe you set a cap on the mortgage amount, or you decide not to buy a house until the student loans are paid off. You know, there's all kinds of ways of reducing the amount of debt that you have, or avoiding increasing the amount of debt.
Unknowingly increasing the amount of debt.
Well,
yeah.
In any way. Yeah. Whether you know because, or not know, you know.
Yeah, because you just kind of get into it. You get the car, you get the house, you get the kids, you get the credit cards, and it just snowballs downhill. And another important decision to make is how are we going to teach the kids to be good money managers? You know, ideas on how to teach kids about money will vary based on how successfully or unsuccessfully you were taught how to manage money when you were a child. So there's no right or wrong answers as long as you are on the same page as your spouse and you have a plan for how to teach the kids to manage money.
You know, the things that you've got to consider are you going to give them an allowance or not? Are you going to have them save a portion of any money that they get as birthday presents or Christmas presents or grandma presents, you know? Or do they have to earn everything? Will you teach them to have a certain portion of money that they set aside to give as gifts, okay? Teach them to be generous early. You know, the important thing is that the two of you as parents be on the same page and be consistent with your children on the way you're going to approach money and how you're going to teach them. If one of you is a bad guy and the other one bails the kids out anytime they need money, what are you teaching them? You are teaching them to work you and your spouse to get what they want.
So all these suggested money decisions are to help you communicate about money so it never becomes an issue in your marriage.
I hope you noticed there was one common theme throughout today's show, and that's communication. We cannot stress the importance of talking at least once a month, if not more frequently, which we'd love to see happen, about your financial situation, no matter how painful the discussion may be. Don't wait until you hit rock bottom to start that line of communication. You can share the show with friends. Also, take a look at our summary of today's show simply by going to compasscatholic.org. Just scroll down and look for podcast summary. And before we leave you today, let's answer one of the emails that we received this week. John and Evelyn, I've been told that diversifying investments is a biblical principle. Can you point me towards a scripture on that?
Well, I sure can. If you look at Ecclesiastes 11:12, it says, divide your portion to 7 or even 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur upon the earth. And, you know, in today's economic environment, I think this is particularly astute advice. You don't know what's going to happen. This sector is up and this one's down this week, and next week they reverse, and then the week following, it's just a real toss-up. So the better diversified you are with your finances, the vehicles you're using as savings vehicles, the better off you're going to be.
And I think it's also important to understand your time frame for saving. If you're a young person in your 20s or 30s and you're saving for retirement, you may be able to put more of your savings into a higher risk savings venue than if you're 50 and planning on retiring in 10 or 15 years. So you need to understand your time frame, especially in a long-term savings like retirement, so that you're prepared to ride the ups and downs of whatever vehicle you're using for savings.
And we do have time for one more. John and Evelyn, we are totally debt-free except for our mortgage. We have a fully funded emergency fund. Should I continue to save for retirement or pay off the house before contributing anything else towards retirement?
It sounds to me like you're at destination 5 on the Compass money map. And that's where your focus should be, both on paying off the mortgage and investing or saving. So I'd split any monthly surplus in half, and I'd use half to pay off the house and the other half to go towards the retirement.
And if you have a question for John and Evelyn, by all means, send it to ask@compasscatholic.org. Also, don't forget to check out the resources that we have available for you to take advantage of absolutely free. They are available at compasscatholic.org. One of my favorite resources is the calculators. You can take a look at credit card debt. What's it going to take to get it down to zero? Also, if you're in the retirement zone, how much do I need before I retire, or how much do I need while I'm in retirement? All those calculators are waiting for you and available free at compasscatholic.org. For John and Evelyn Bean, thank you so much for listening. And remember, we have a brand new podcast for you. It's available bright and early Wednesday morning. Simply go to compasscatholic.org. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we're from Compass Catholic Ministries.